Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls because right now we have with us Dr. Garth Nicholson from the Institute of Medical Research. What's the exact title of the name?
Institute for Molecular Medicine.
Institute for Molecular Medicine, and Professor Nicholson was at the certainly at the MD Anderson Clinic in Texas for many years, and certainly one of the outstanding research scientists we have in America. And of course, he has done a lot of work with mycoplasma, and of course, the influence of that on the chronic fatigue syndrome, upon Lou Gehrig's disease. And well, what are the latest things that you're finding in your research as you begin looking into the background of these chronic infections and their impact on the lives of the American people?
Well, it's very interesting because when we start looking at a variety of different chronic illnesses, particularly the illnesses that fall in the chronic fatiguing category, things like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia syndrome, and to a lesser degree, rheumatic diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and so on, we find that inevitably there are chronic infections involved. Some of these are bacterial, some of these are viral, and in some patients have both viral and bacterial infections. And the reason that this is important is that often these patients have very unusual signs and symptoms, sometimes even autoimmune signs and symptoms. And these infections are the type that can trigger those types of responses. And they also cause problems inside our cells which have to do with energy. And this has to do with the fatigue aspect of all of these illnesses. And you know, it's very interesting because when we first got started on this, we really weren't working on directly on fatigue per se. And now we've come to the point where fatigue is a major problem. And in fact, it is the most major problem of people seeking medical care. It's the number one complaint of the general public that go to see general practitioners. So that if you go to see your family doctor, what is the most likely complaint that you'll give? Fatigue. So we've been working on this issue of fatigue, and it relates a lot to chronic infections, but it relates to other things as well inside cells. And in fact, we're looking at one of the main sources of energy of the cell. It's an organelle called the mitochondria. And the mitochondria are important because they provide almost all of the energy for our cells. And so if something goes wrong with the mitochondria, then we don't have enough energy in our cells, and then we see fatigue as a result of that. And so it's really a very fundamental issue now that we're going to look at in detail, and we've actually conducted two clinical trials to try and find substances and so on which would help in this process to bring the mitochondria back up to standards or bring them back to where they were before patients started to see signs of fatigue and so on. And, you know, it's very interesting what we found because one of the things that happens in mitochondria, of course, is that they get damaged. And when they're damaged, they begin to lose function. And this happens normally with aging, so it's not just a process of disease. But during the normal aging process, our mitochondria get damaged and they run down, almost like running down a battery in a flashlight. And one of the things that happens is the insulation gets damaged. And just like if you damage the insulation in your battery, the battery will run down and your flashlight won't work any longer. Same thing with the mitochondria.
All right, we're going to have to sort of interrupt you there for a minute because we really want to get into this in a great deal of detail. I practiced medicine for 40 years, and, you know, this was not a major complaint 20, 30 years ago, but it is increasingly true today. We'll be right back here with Dr. Garth Nicholson. Well, the this is Dr. Stan here. And of course, our special guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson for the Institute of Molecular Medicine in Southern California. And for many years, while Dr. Nicholson was at the MD Anderson Cancer Clinic in Texas. And of course, I've gone to the library and gone through his papers, and he's written, well, the last time I checked, you were almost to 500 peer reviews articles. How many are you right now?
550.
Well, he's certainly one of the prolific writers in the country, but even more than that, you know, he's just thought of very, very highly by the scientists throughout the country. And of course, he has taken off really more or less on his own, set up his own institute where he can do what the type of research that really needs to be done, because, you know, we're talking about a whole change in the American population. Do you think that this was a problem, this problem of fatigue was a problem 40 years ago?
Well, it was there 40 years ago, but I don't think it was there to the same extent that it is today. And I think one of the reasons for that is that we have many more things in our environment, toxic materials in our environment, for example, and this includes the types of infections that we work on. And so there are many different ways in which people can be infected or are damaged by these toxic materials in the environment, both biological and chemical. And this tends to build up over the years, and with our more toxic environment, I think people are more susceptible to these things, and that's why, one of the reasons why we see more of these chronic illnesses, chronic fatiguing illnesses and other types of chronic illnesses than we ever saw in years past.
And of course, I can remember when I went to medical school, we never heard of mycoplasma. Maybe they were there, maybe the bacteriologist, the scientist knew about them, but certainly the average doctor didn't. It really wasn't until, you know, I suppose the mid-70s or late 70s when people began talking about mycoplasma and mycoplasma, atypical pneumonia related to mycoplasma. And now, of course, we're even finding a lot of the flu and influenza is related to this. This is just a whole new field that's growing and its impact on the American people. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, I think it is a fair statement. And in fact, as we've seen the increase in these types of infections, we've also seen an increase in the consequence of those infections. So we have alarming rates of increase of things like asthma, in a variety of different chronic illnesses that not only relate to respiratory conditions, but also relate to rheumatic conditions like everything from rheumatoid arthritis to a variety of other rheumatic conditions. And also, as we mentioned before, the fatiguing illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome.
All right,
these were relatively unheard of 20, 30 years ago.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about this whole new group of diseases, mycoplasma infections, which, of course, involve with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. But, of course, most of the patients with AIDS also have this infection as well, don't they?
Oh, yes. The overwhelming majority have this type of infection and many other infections as well. And of course, that's one of the problems with any immunosuppression condition. Is that you're quite susceptible to these types of infections. So I have to put cancer in that category as well. And before we left the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, we found that many cancer patients had these infections, and they got a lot worse, of course, during the process of treating their cancer. So it's not something that we knew a lot about 20 or 30 years ago, but I think now it's becoming more and more important, and hopefully in the future, these problems will be more adequately addressed.
But do you think it's much more prevalent? In other words, there's much more of this than there was 20, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the 20th century, cancer was not that major a problem in America. Increasing incidence of cancer, dramatic, even frightening incidence, increasing incidence over the last century.
Well, there is an increase in these sorts of things, but there's also been a decrease in certain problems as well. that we saw at the beginning, let's say, of the last century compared to now the beginning of the new century. So there has been a change. But in addition to the change in our ability to treat certain types of diseases and so on, we've also seen a rise in some of these chronic conditions, which up until recently were fairly untreatable, and or they were virtually being ignored by the medical profession. And I don't think that was right. And a lot of these patients that came down with these unusual chronic conditions, they were being more or less ignored, or their problems were being given short shrift by physicians who were looking for the things that they were trained to look for.
Well, basically, I think the bigger thing was the chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, when chronic fatigue first came around, and I suppose it was about the early 1980s, or probably there before that, but first reported, and everybody was ridiculing this. Oh, these people are all crazy. They all need a psychiatrist who would give them a little Cinequine so they'll sleep better, and then they'll get better. And there were a lot of people whose whole lives were totally destroyed by this. And this was a relatively new, this severe chronic fatigue syndrome was a relatively new entity, wasn't it?
Well, it was. There were complaints of fatigue and everything that go back, even though they have different names in the early part of the last century, but still they were there. But I think that there has been a genuine increase in the number of people that have these complaints. And I think that epidemiologists will have to look carefully at this because of the way diseases were measured in the past. And yes, a lot of this was dismissed as psychological to begin with. But, you know, I look at our problems with Gulf War illness. When we first started working on that problem, the government was saying this was all post-traumatic stress disorder. These were somatoform disorders caused by stress, and they were not organically caused or medically caused. They were psychological. And of course, we've now proven that that's not the case, and now they've finally dropped that as an explanation for Gulf War illness, and they're willing more and more to look at organic causes of Gulf War illness. But it took a while. It took almost a decade to convince the government, so you can imagine how long it's going to take, or how long it took to convince people that things like chronic fatigue syndrome were not just all in your head, that there was something medically wrong with these people, not psychological. And again, the problem is that the signs and symptoms of these illnesses are not unique. They're not what we call specific. They're what we call non-specific. That is, many of the signs and symptoms could be present in a variety of different medical conditions and illnesses. And unless you have something that's really, really specific, as you know, it's very hard to diagnose it if the signs and symptoms are relatively non-specific. So that was part of the problem. And the other part of the problem was, is that, frankly, people just didn't know what they were dealing with. Researchers, physicians, and so on that looked at this problem didn't know where to start. They didn't really understand some of the basics of this. And they had to go back, in a way, back to science, back to the laboratory to figure out, number one, is there something that we can detect that's wrong with these individuals? And number two, is there something we can do to improve it or correct it? And I think now we're at the point where we've decided, yes, we've found things that are wrong, so we know that there are things that are really wrong. It's not just a psychological illness. There's a genuine scientific and molecular reason for these illnesses. And then the second thing is, how do we correct that? And that's where we are now.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Gulf War illness, because I know that you've really done so much work on that. How many of the Gulf War veterans of the 700,000 young, healthy people we sent over to the Gulf, report that they're having serious problems at the present time? Do we have any idea?
Well, between 150 and 200,000 of them have registered for benefits. And so that will give you an indication of the number. And it's very high compared to other wars. It's about anywhere from 18% to 22% of the deployed personnel have now come down with some form of illness. The percentages of severe illness are about 16% to 18%. And that's so much higher if you look at Korea, which was about 6% after the war of people who came down with chronic conditions. Vietnam was higher than that. It was around 10% or so. So you can see that it's very, very high compared to those other wars. And so something happened, something went wrong there, and it couldn't all be dismissed as post-traumatic stress disorder. And the signs and symptoms that these individuals had were very similar to chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome. So when we got involved, in fact, one of the first studies that we did was to look at the signs and symptoms of 650 veterans, and when we compared them to fibromyalgia syndrome and chronic fatigue syndrome, they were almost identical. And this showed us that there was something real here, that this was not just a psychological condition. And then when we looked further, we started looking at things like chronic infections and so on, And one of the reasons we did that is because the illnesses were passing to immediate family members, and that sort of meant that they had to be biological. And then we subsequently found that about 40% of the veterans that we looked at, and that's a percentage which has now been confirmed in a large VA study and by two other groups, had these unusual infections, which we've just been describing. One, a mycoplasmal infection, but that's only one of the several infections that we've actually found in Gulf War veterans. So at least in 40% of them, we think there's an infectious basis for their disease. And certainly in the trials that we've run, where they've been treated adequately for their infections, they have recovered. So that's another piece of evidence that these were underlying their condition. These infections were causing their condition. There's another group of veterans that have their illness primarily due to chemical exposures, and they tend to have conditions like multiple chemical sensitivity syndrome, which means they're very, very sensitive to a variety of different chemicals at very low concentrations and so on. So again, these illnesses are not just simply due to one thing. They're due to a variety of different types of exposures, toxic exposures, both biological and chemical in many cases. And we can see similarities with civilians that are now coming down with these chronic conditions.
Well, of course, you know, the men who went to Vietnam and fought, and many of them that were there for several years at a time under constant stress, the Gulf War was a 100-hour war. I mean, how could you possibly believe that this was a chronic stress syndrome after 100 hours of battle, and most of the people weren't even involved in the battle? And, of course, one of the big things was the government consistently denied that there was any exposure to poison gas. And then, maybe 500 troops or 5,000 troops or 10,000 troops. The last figure I saw was they acknowledged 130,000 boys had been subject and exposed to poison gas, sarin or other poison gases, which can have a profound and long-standing effect. And, of course, it wasn't Saddam Hussein who released the chemicals. It was our own government when they blew up the bunker at Kamishia, and they denied it. They lied. I mean, I was very disturbed that they were not forthcoming in admitting this whole thing. And, you know, for years they fought any effort on the part of these young men to get compensation or treatment.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, it's not only, of course, blowing up the bunkers at Kamishia and at other locations after the war. And, of course, they were also exposed to the oil field fumes from burning wells and so on. But we have to take a look at the vaccines very carefully, because there are now three epidemiological studies published, two from Great Britain and one from the U.S., showing a linkage between the multiple vaccinations that troops received during deployment and Gulf War illness rates. And it's very interesting. They found the highest rates of Gulf War illness in deployed forces that were given multiple vaccines during deployment. But the next highest rate they found in actually people who weren't even deployed but were given the vaccines. They were waiting for deployment, but the war ended so early. And in between were people that were deployed but didn't receive the vaccine. So that shows that there is a good link in many cases with the multiple vaccines. So when you look at that part of the problem, multiple vaccines, given the way they are in the military, are very immune-suppressing. Most of the deployed forces receive between 20 and 30 inoculations within a 2 or 3 day period. That's a lot of vaccine to receive all at once, and what it tends to do is suppress your immune system when you receive that many insults within short time periods of 2 to 3 days. They're trying to change that regimen now. I noticed during the deployment process, instead of trying to give them all at once after they arrived in the Persian Gulf area, that they've tried to give them some of the inoculations before they're even deployed, some during deployment, and some when they get there. So they're getting a little smarter on that, but I'm still not sure of the actual vaccines themselves.
Well, of course, the other thing, I was just reading the other day, they have some new treatment for peanut sensitivity. 1.5 million Americans are so sensitive to peanuts, that just the slightest contact may even create an anaphylactic response. And I just wonder, how many of these people, have had multiple vaccinations that have primed their immune system to respond. I know my son has a peanut allergy and almost died, I believe, as a result of the shots he got in the military. Severe asthma. And of course, there's so many young people never deployed at all that have that problem. We're going to be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Garth Nicholson.
the Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, Allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure Allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure Allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamax. Alamax provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamax? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention, too, that if you're out there across America and you're concerned that we're entering very, very difficult times in this country, and of course, most people think that water comes out of a faucet, but what happens if you turn on the faucet, there's no water, and you've got to get that from other sources, and how can you be sure it's going to be clean? Well, the Big Berkey water filter is the ultimate in water filters. It's the most economic filter you can buy. The ceramic filters can be recleaned up to 100 times or more. It's convenient. It sets up in minutes without any need for plumbing tools or electricity. It's powerful. The Big Berkey removes pathogens such as E. coli, cholera, and cryptosporidium, and reduces chlorine, herbicides, pesticides, foul taste, and odors. The Big Berkey is so powerful it can easily filter raw, untreated water from lakes or rivers. It's an elegant, the high-grade polished stainless steel will complement your finest decor. It's flexible. You can move it from place to place without difficulty. Ordinarily, these are $279. Through Radio Liberty, they're available for $239, and then, of course, $10 for shipping. But we offer you either a video or a four-tape set that we've produced if you get it to us. If you ask for it, we'll be glad to provide that for you. And need to tell you, though, that it'll be a couple of weeks before these are available right now. There is another product, however, that is available now. The Big Berkey is not available in California, but there is another item we're carrying. It's called the Berkey Light. It is available in 49 states. The only state it's not available in is Iowa. And it's simply a clear. It's made of a high quality plastic, so you could drop it out of an airplane, but it's clear and you can actually see the water inside. It has a different filter, perhaps a much more powerful filter, but it only lasts for 2 years. The Berkey filters can be cleaned 100 times and they'll last a long time. The other filters will last for 2 years, of course, it actually reduces bacteria and other items below detectable levels. But if you'd like to get a Berkey Light or Big Berkey, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson. Dr. Nicholson, would you like to get your address out and, of course, your website? Because if there is a problem with chronic fatigue or these chronic infections, there's no place you're going to get more information than from Dr. Garth Nicholson, the Institute of Molecular Medicine.
Well, I'd love to give our website. As a matter of fact, we've just heard recently that it's the number one website in molecular medicine now, and so people should take a look at it. It's www.immed.org. It's like immediate.org. That's how to remember it, immediate.org, immed.org.
All right, fine. And of course, Dr. Nicholson is really, I think, is one of the world's leading experts on the chronic fatigue syndrome, which is such a disabling condition. And of course, if you do have a mycoplasma infection as a basis for it, then treatment is available. There are many other things, of course, that they advocate too, as far as building up your immune system. But let's continue talking about the Gulf War. And of course, there were multiple chemicals there that they were fighting men were exposed to. What about the depleted uranium? Of course, the government insists that, you know, it's all depleted. You can pick up these depleted uranium shells without any difficulty. But what about when you get the dust into your lungs and into your body?
Well, depleted uranium, people have to understand, is that depleted uranium still has about one-third the radioactivity of enriched uranium. Depleted uranium is simply a byproduct, an industrial byproduct of the process of making uranium fuel for reactors. And this was piling up for years, and they didn't really know what to do with it. And some bright guy figured out that this would be actually perfect to make armor penetrators. And so they devised shells and explosives and so on that contain this depleted uranium so that they could actually fire through a target that was armored, and it would penetrate the target much better than any high explosive. And so they designed these DU penetrators, as they're called, depleted uranium penetrators, and now they're used in all kinds of different shells. They're used in aircrafts like the A-10, that's a tank-busting aircraft flown by the Air Force. They're used in the Bradley fighting vehicle by the Abrams M1A1 tank, and a variety of other conditions. Even the Navy uses them for close-in combat support. And so these have a number of different uses now, and they also put them inside the armor to strengthen the armor of the tanks and fighting vehicles and so on. Now, the problem with it is not when it's in armor or even in a penetrating shell. It's when it burns. And this happens when these shells, which are high explosives, are fired at very high velocity. And when they hit a very solid target, like a tank, for example, and they hit the armor on the tank, they actually burn. There's so much kinetic energy in these projectiles that the depleted uranium actually burns its way through. And if you ever saw pictures, for example, of the Iraqi tanks destroyed during the first Gulf War, they're very small holes that are punched through by these penetrators. And that's what happens. These actually burn through. And when they burn, of course, that means that the uranium, the depleted uranium, is oxidized, and it forms uranium oxide. And it's a very light, fluffy material, but it's dense, and so eventually it can settle down on the sand or on the armor and on the vehicle that's destroyed and so on. And if it's kicked up by the wind or whatever, and you inhale those particles into your lung because they're very small in size, and they get deep in your lung, then this can cause a major problem. It can set up a condition called pneumonitis in your lungs, but it can also be absorbed in your lungs because they're very small particles. And when that happens, it gets in your system and is deposited in your tissues, and one of the common places it goes is the bone. And so the uranium, which still has some radioactivity, ends up in your bone. If it's a very small amount, it might not be too much of a problem, but in many cases, this could be a problem. And we don't know the extent of this problem even, because long-term studies on the toxic nature of DU really haven't been conducted, to my knowledge. And we haven't even devised effective ways to monitor against DU contamination. So this is something that I know there's very active work going on in the area right now. But when you think of the hundreds of tons of depleted uranium that's left on a battlefield, for example, in southern Iraq, it was estimated that 400 tons of depleted uranium is still there. It has a half-life of several thousand years, so it's going to be there a long time.
Well, no, of course, can it get into the crops? Can it get into the water? Can it what's happened in Kuwait? I understood there were a lot of those people over in Kuwait who were really quite ill.
Well, I was a visiting professor in Kuwait a few years back, and I did go around to some of the clinics and had a chance to talk to the people there. And yes, there's a very high incidence of chronic illness in Kuwait now that wasn't present before the Gulf War.
All right, fine. So we're just going to have to wait and see what the impact is. I know that in Europe they were very disturbed because many of the young men, many of the British soldiers or European soldiers, were developing leukemia, and then they came up with studies and said, well, really didn't, but then can we really believe the studies? We'll be right back here with Dr. Garth Nicholson.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just wanted to tell you a little bit about Miracle Tooth soap products, and it's a long way from practicing orthopedics to selling soap, and basically the reason we do this is just to subsidize our ministry so that we can progressively expand our coverage, and as you know right now, our weekend program is heard on 35 stations across America. And some people are hearing the truth that they're not getting from the controlled media. So the Miracle Tooth soap products are a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and of course a neutralizer, a very alkaline solution, which some people take, and they claim it helps their heartburn, and now we can't make any medical claims for these products. We will tell you, though, that the people who've used them love them. Miracle Tooth soap products are wonderful soap, and of course we hope that they will help you as well. If you'd like to get a trial, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Miracle Tooth soap products, and you can get a special discount introductory offer. And then, of course, I want to remind you, if you have children that are grandchildren in government schools, they probably are not being taught to read phonetically. And that's the basis of being able to grasp what's going on, to be able to spell, to be able to pronounce words properly, and, of course, to be able to read with any clarity. So if you would like to give your children or grandchildren one of the greatest gifts you can, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and order a Monopoly set. Now, it's played like Monopoly. It's a board game. It's actually 5 board games and 2 bonus games, and everything there you need to learn. There are tapes. You'll listen to them, and you'll learn the 40 sounds and the 12 rules of the spelling and the English language. Most of these programs, $300-$800. This one's $139.95, and we throw in a couple of tapes with it. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Phenopoly. Well, Dr. Stan here, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about these diseases that are plaguing so many people today. And, of course, if there's chronic infection, it tends to attack the mitochondria. They're little, don't ask me to describe what they are, but in the cells, I remember studying biology, and they have a great deal to do with the energy of the cell and how that cell functions normally. And if that cell has been infiltrated by mycoplasma or these other chronic infections, why they just don't work well, and do the mycoplasma actually get into the cells of the body? And
yes, they do. And in fact, they actually hide inside our cells, and that's why they're so difficult to get rid of, and that's why we have to use things like antibiotics and so on to go in after them. The immune system has a very difficult time operating inside cells. It usually operates in our systems, but outside our cells. And one of the things that we found that these chronic infections do that cause fatiguing illnesses is that when they get inside the cell, they release substances which damage the mitochondria. And you can think of the mitochondria as little batteries inside your cells, little batteries floating around providing energy for your cell in the form of high-energy molecules. And what happens is that these toxic molecules released by the mycoplasma and certain other intracellular bacteria like chlamydia and pneumoniae, for example, damage the membranes around the mitochondria, and they provide the insulation for the mitochondria. And just like if you strip the insulation off a battery, it runs down very quickly and no more energy is left in the battery. The same thing with the little mitochondria, the little energy sources inside your cells. If the lipids get damaged, the energy runs down. And so one of the things that we've done some studies on is replacing those lipids, and actually it's called lipid replacement therapy. And there's a couple of new products that are out on the market, and one of these we had in two clinical trials recently called Propex, P-R-O-P-A-X, and that product turned out to be very beneficial, and we saw about a 40% increase in energy and a decrease in fatigue, about a 40% decrease in fatigue, along with measuring the mitochondrial function directly, a corresponding increase in the functional the function of the mitochondria, so their ability to produce energy was increased as well by about the same amount. So these studies show that it's very important to maintain the integrity of the mitochondria, and anything that destroys that integrity, be it chemical or be it biological, like these infections, will damage them and cause the energy to run down in the cell, and this ultimately results in fatigue.
Now, what is this Propex that you're speaking of? What sort of product is it?
Well, Propex is a combination of antioxidants and a factor that they put in called NT factor. An NT factor is actually an extract of lipids that are the same type of lipids that are found in the mitochondria. And it's put encapsulated in a way so that it's not damaged and isn't oxidized when you take it in every day. And then it gets in your system and it starts replacing the lipids, which are all natural lipids. It's an all natural product. And this really kind of repairs the mitochondria, and then their function is increased and improved. And we did two different types of studies. And one type of study, we took people that were sick with diseases that may be caused by viruses and bacteria and so on, but ultimately resulting in mitochondrial damage. And then we took a group of people that were greater than 70 years of age, in which the normal mitochondrial function goes down, and these people tend to lose energy normally with time. In both these types of patients with infections, for example, in the aged patients, both had problems with their mitochondria. They both showed the mitochondria running down and less able to produce the high-energy molecules necessary to maintain the cells. And when we took both these groups and put them on this product, we saw within 30 to 60 days dramatic and significant, actually we did the statistics on it, significant increases in their energy. And so we think that these are the types of things in the future that we have to do. We have to repair the systems in our cells that have been destroyed, and this is one way to do it.
And, of course, that is used in conjunction with antibiotics as well to attack the infections?
Yes, you have to remove or suppress the infection if there's an infection there. If it's a natural aging process without an infection, and normally what happens is that our membranes get oxidized, the lipids get damaged, and then the mitochondria become leaking. And as they become leaky, they can't maintain their function. And so the lipids need to be replaced. We need to replace those oxidized lipids. And so this is a product that helps do that.
All right.
And that's a natural consequence of aging as well.
All right. Let's go to Fred calling in from Salinas. Hi, Fred. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon. I want to ask, I know that during the Iran-Iraq war that we supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical and biological weapons.
Well, that was before the war. That was not during the war, but before the war we did, certainly. We allowed them to buy them here in the United States.
But they used them during the Iran-Iraq war, and I was just wondering, you know, we gleaned all the information that the Germans had from World War II out of the camps that they had, and I'm just wondering if there's any chance that I know we had the CIA working in Iraq during the Iran-Iraq war, and I was wondering if there's any chance that we might have gleaned any information out of the use of those agents in wartime.
Well, I'm sure that some of that information has found its way back through our intelligence services, because we were very keenly interested in finding out what types of weapons of mass destruction that the Iraqis were using primarily against the Iranians during the Iran-Iraq war. And we know they used a variety of different types of chemical agents, nerve agents, for example, mustard agents, and so on. So they used blister agents, they used nerve agents, and so on against the Iranians very successfully in southern Iraq, by the way. They also used different types of biologicals against them, and this is less well known. And they used toxins, for example, isolated from both plants and fungi. And they used some other things, some bacteria as well. We don't know the extent of their biologic programs during the Iran-Iraq War, but they certainly, since that war, stepped up their biological warfare programs so that during the time of the Gulf War, they were pretty sophisticated in both chemical and biological warfare agents. As a matter of fact, the Iraqi army probably had more experience than any army in the world in the offensive use of chemical and biologic weapons. So that's where we stood at that war in 1991. Since then, they've continued to work on some of these programs, although they've been impeded because of the UN inspectors and the damage that was done to their programs. And of course, they've tried to limit the amount of materials that were shipped to Iraq to try and limit their ability to further develop weapons of mass destruction. But as you know, that they can always find ways to get around these programs. So here we are now in 2003 facing the same situation in a way that we faced in 1991. We know they have these weapons. There's certainly, they have nothing to lose in using the weapons this time around. So we'll probably see more extensive use of these weapons this time than we saw last time. Our government denied that these weapons were used last time, although we found in the troops themselves some evidence for this. And of course, in congressional testimony, there was other testimony as well that indicated that these weapons were used at least in limited strikes against coalition forces during the war in 1991.
I had heard that
they'll be used again.
I had heard that they not only bombed those bunkers there at Kamacita, but they had bombed about 95 other spots during that war.
Oh, yes. They tried to target all of the production facilities, all of the storage facilities, all of the, any facilities that they had any concentrations of unconventional weapons. They went after those vigorously, including the delivery systems for them, aircraft, Scud missiles, and so on and so forth.
Well, you know what, I really fear that some of our people are not very smart. I mean, you would think that even a sixth grade student would know that if you blow up explosive missiles that contain, chemical warfare agents, that they would explode and that they would go off in the air. And yet they seem to think that you could blow up Kamacita with all these, the poison gas there, and nothing was going to happen. It just, it defies imagination that nobody's ever been held responsible for the fact that 130,000 American boys were exposed to sarin and other poison gas, not by Saddam Hussein, but by blowing up the depots there, and perhaps there were other depots as well.
Well, these types of weapons have to be incinerated. You can't just use high explosives because that just disperses them. They're not destroyed by high explosives.
Well, that's
either
right.
The chemicals or the biologicals. It's usually, very extensive heat is used to destroy these types of agents.
That would be the logical thing to do, but apparently sometimes I think there's very, very little logic by some of our military leaders, and that's frightening.
Well, the whole thing at the end of the war was pretty absurd, and when they came across the huge stores at Kamacita, I think that nobody really knew what to do with it. They'd never even seen so many bunkers before, and stored with all kinds of munitions, and part of it, and we've seen the tapes that were kind of snuck out by some of the engineers that actually went down in these bunkers and showed that many of the munitions, of course, were from the U.S., Germany, and other NATO allies that supplied all kinds of weapons to the Iraqis. And so that was an embarrassing thing that they probably wanted to eliminate and destroy and so on. So, they had production facilities for some of these agents, but a lot of them they purchased from the Allies, from coalition members before the war. When they were our nominal allies, the United States sold all kinds of different chemical and biologic weapons to the Iraqis.
Okay, anything else, Fred?
No, I think I'll do it.
All right.
You guys have a good day.
Thank you so much. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Dr. Nicholson, the telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And, of course, we're talking about the certainly these chronic illnesses that plague so many Americans, and the mycoplasm. And now, of course, chlamydia is becoming increasingly a problem, isn't it, as well?
Oh, yes, and it was a problem all along. It's just that it wasn't recognized as such, but the chlamydia, is, like mycoplasma, is an intracellular bacteria that causes havoc inside our cells. And these slow-growing bacteria and bacterial forms like mycoplasmas, they're not the typical type of infectious disease that most infectious disease docs would recognize right away. These are insidious because they're very slow-growing, they're intracellular, they don't elicit a strong immune response. They slowly interfere with cellular function, and they get in unusual places. And one of the interesting things about mycoplasma and chlamydia is that they get in your heart and in your blood vessels, and they cause coagulation disturbances and so on. And so this can cause major problems in the long term for people that have these types of infections, major heart problems, major vascular problems, ultimately leading in heart disease and stroke and high incidence of these types of problems in people that have these long-term infections.
And I think this is something that's only been recognized recently, is that some heart attacks and some strokes are directly related to infection, and of course, here's something that is preventable and treatable. Now, what is the relationship between the mycoplasm and what we refer to as AIDS or HIV disease? Do some people with AIDS not have mycoplasma infections? Do some people just have HIV but no mycoplasma infection? And what is their course?
Well, you know, everyone is different, but one of the interesting aspects of this particular disease process is that you can have HIV and not be sick, because the HIV itself doesn't cause the signs and symptoms that we associate with AIDS. It does cause immune suppression, and then if there are infections, it's usually the other infections that cause the AIDS syndrome. And mycoplasma is one of those other infections, and it goes along very often with HIV-1. The overwhelming majority of HIV-1 positive patients that are showing AIDS-type symptoms have the mycoplasmas as well. And they also have other infections along with that. And it's these infections that in some cases may go along with HIV, in other cases may come along later as opportunistic infections that cause the real problem.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that you could have HIV and not be ill, but it's the other infections that that complicate the whole situation. And these are not, you know, the pneumonia and the other gross infections you get, but these subclinical infections that devastate the body and its resistance. Would that be a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. And those other types of infections, even with a partially compromised immune system, you might be able to fight them off, but the insidious nature of these intracellular infections like chlamydia, pneumonia, and mycoplasma, and a number of other different viruses and bacteria are that they hide from the immune system. And so when they get in place in our system, they're very, very difficult to get rid of.
Well, now, what about the relationship to Lou Gehrig's disease? I mean, this has always been looked upon as a chronic incurable disease of young people, and, of course, it results in death. But isn't there some evidence now, certainly, that some of this can be improved with treatment?
Well, we've just, interesting you bring that up, because we've just published a paper in a neurology journal on this, because we found that about 90% of the people with ALS have a mycoplasmal infection that goes along with the disease. We also found 100% of the Gulf War veterans, including British, American, and Australian veterans that have ALS from the Gulf War, all of them have this one type of infection, in that case Mycoplasma fermentans. They also have other viral infections, and these infections are known to be what we call neurotrophic infections, that is, they can invade into the central nervous system. And the unusual virus actually found in France and Germany first is in the class with polio. And it's in a class of virus that does attack the central nervous system. And it's interesting, we think that the virus and the bacteria get together to destroy motor neuron cells in the brainstem and the central nervous system. And this causes the condition we know as ALS or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease. So in that case, once you've identified that virtually every patient has the infection, can you treat and does it do anything? And we've completed a pilot study on this. We never had the funds to do this completely, but we had about 30 patients in this pilot study, and they were treated with both antivirals and antibiotics. And unfortunately, the study was too short. It only lasted 8 weeks. But within the 8 weeks, we found the rest of the progression of ALS in many of these patients, and we found that some of these patients actually had reversal of their signs and symptoms. We had people who couldn't speak that regained the ability to speech. We had people that could no longer walk that regained the ability to walk, and so on. Unfortunately, the trial ended too quickly. Within a few months after the trial, the people started to progress again, and that shows that you have to really do more than that to save these patients.
All right, fine. Well, this is really rather exciting because there's so many things out there that really can help these terrible, terrible diseases. But, of course, unfortunately, most people are really not aware of this. This is not only recently you've published this article in the what was the title of the article of the journal you were in?
I'm not sure which article.
Oh, the one on ALS you said you just published.
Oh, that was in the Journal of Clinical Neurosciences.
All right, fine. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you. We'll look forward to having you, I think, next week, one of the evening programs.
Well, I'll look forward to that, too.
Thank you so very much. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've been talking to Dr. Garth Nicholson of the Institute of Molecular Medicine, IMMED. If you need to, get in touch with him up on the web. And I can tell you he's certainly one of the most responsible, capable scientists in America today. That's IMMED, and we'll be right back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course I want to just mention a couple of items which I really think that you would want to get. If you want to understand what's really going on over the Middle East and who financed the whole Al-Qaeda movement, Osama bin Laden, why you need to get the book Hatred's Kingdom. It's the story of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has been funding this movement for many years. And, of course, it's been funding the radical Islamic movement here in the United States and many of the terrorist cells that are right here in this country. And they've gone into our prisons to recruit people into this radical form of Muslim faith, people who hate America. And what difficult to understand is that the average American has never told the truth. Whereas, of course, there's a strong relationship between Saudi Arabia and Al-Qaeda. We're going to war with Iraq. And the question is, why? Well, that's answered in, of course, our latest newsletter. And if you want to get either our February or March newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But the book you want to get, and it's just off the press, it's called Hatred's Kingdom. We really recommend that for you. Hatred's Kingdom, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then if you want to understand who killed the President of the United States, who killed President Kennedy, why you want to get the book Regicide, it's based upon the papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was Assistant Deputy Director of Covert Operations for the CIA for many years. And when he died, he left his papers to Mr. Gregory Douglas, one of our friends, and based upon the papers of the gentleman, why he admits readily that they killed President Kennedy, why they killed President Kennedy, how they killed President Kennedy. It's a fascinating story. It's called Regicide. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Now, if this is true, why don't people know? Well, we have another book called The Dead Witnesses, the story of almost 100 people who knew of what had happened and ended up very dead.
Ah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we hope that many of you out there will want to seriously consider getting the book, Redecide. It's the story of the assassination of President Kennedy. We carry another book called The Dead Witnesses. It's a story of over 100 people who, of course, had witnessed one or another aspect of the assassination, and they were all murdered. Or at least many of them were murdered right here in the United States. How could you get away with something like that? Why, you control the media. Now, the book Redecide actually has a list of over 4,000 people that Mr. Crowley, who, of course, was in charge of Murder Incorporated in the CIA, people that he felt that he could be in touch with. Many of them, of course, had been members of military intelligence, belonging to the retired military intelligence officers organization, many of them in the media. And, of course, it's the book I recommend to you. It's called Regicide, with a list of 4,000 people that the CIA felt that they could depend upon. In fact, one of them is my next-door neighbor right here in Santa Cruz. I would wonder what he might have information he might have relayed about my activities. But be that as it may, the book Redecide, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then, of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America, why, we hope that many of you will decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. And certainly for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do 5 hours every day as we reach out across America with information you're not going to get elsewhere. Now, sometimes what we say you may not like, you may not agree with. We try to give you the information that as we see it. And if it isn't popular, don't blame me. These are the facts as they are. And most people don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear about how we've kept Saddam Hussein in power. But you need to get the book See No Evil by Robert Baer, who was the chief CIA officer in northern Iraq in 1995. He said that almost every Iraqi he met believed that the United States government was keeping Saddam in power. Why would we do something like that? Why would we block efforts by the Iraqi military to overthrow Saddam Hussein? There are a lot of unanswered questions. And you better find out the answers, because indeed your life and the survival of this country may very well be at stake. Anyway, we hope that if you would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or perhaps subscribe to the newsletter, and if you would, why, we'd be glad to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like simply a free copy of our newsletter, again, the number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You'll tell other people about the website, because they can not only get our newsletters there free of charge and the other things that we've written, but even more important than that, you're going to be able to listen to our programs live on your computer, and you can listen to the archive programs, and you can, of course, connect to the other networks we do. We do a program at 7 o'clock in the morning on the American Freedom Network. We do a program in the afternoon from 3 to 4 on the Genesis Network. And then, of course, this program as well. And, of course, you'll learn which stations we're on. So go to RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. And then tell others about our website, because, of course, that's how we get our information out across America. And then, of course, at this time, as we're facing a war in the Middle East, we ask you to pray for our men. We ask you to pray for the civilians, the Arabs and the Israelis, both, because, of course, each one of them is made in the image and likeness of God. Pray for our leaders, our ministers, for revival in America. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. So until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
Kyle.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. What did she say about your neighbor?
She's on the list.
Of people
that the CIA has probably felt that this he could call upon. She's no longer my neighbor. He was my neighbor.
I didn't have any change for that. Oh. We'll see you. Oh. Sorry, I thought you had that at the door. We'll see you next week.